Many of them have been hosted by Young Israel of Woodmere. Young Israel of Woodmere is a community. It is actually a city in itself. It is one very large building and lots of little buildings, correct? It is really its own little town that enjoys all Jews and welcomes all Jews in. It is a shul that really, really wants, they want every type of Jew to come and enjoy to be in the house of God, right? To grow from that, to feel the Spirit. The last program that we ran just 2 weeks ago was the Challah Bake, post Mother's Day Challah Bake. I know many of you were there. Rav Shai Schachter came to just be a part of it a little bit, and we love that he came. And we've asked Rav Shai to come speak and give us some words of wisdom. He has a tremendous amount to give over. I believe there are many, many classes that he gives. I'm sure if anyone would
over
just...
Over 1,000, sorry.
Over 1,000? He has given online. Over 1,000 online, recorded. But I think yeah. Weekly, even if you wanted to go and listen, even if you don't understand every word, you can, go to listen at the Young Israel of Woodmere. I'm sure you understand most of them. So, Rav Shai, thank you so much for coming. Rav Shai is a very, very busy man, and we are tremendously grateful. We are tremendously grateful that he took the time out of his busy schedule to share with us some words of Torah, some words of wisdom. So this is the very beginning of that inspiration. Listen up. Don't let the bugs bother you. It's not going to make... In Israel, there won't be any bugs.
Okay, so good evening, everybody. And I'm so honored to be here and to share this experience together with you. Thank you to Nechama for putting this together, and to Stephanie, Malki, and Yonina, and to all the work that goes into putting together an event like this. We know that this doesn't happen by itself, and obviously to our hostess, thank you so much, and you should have lots of happy things in your home, and many opportunities to celebrate, not just with this group, but with many others. Can you hear me in the back? If not, anyone can move up. I hope everyone has one of these. And what I'd like to do tonight is really just give us an opportunity. I know that, how many of you are going to be in Israel for your first time this summer? That's amazing. That's really amazing. And I'd like to say, I'm sure that some of the wonderful women who are here, who have been there before, probably cannot count how many times they've been there before. But I can say for myself, I don't know about you, I don't want to speak for anyone else. I can say for myself that I in some way am extremely jealous of the opportunity that you are all about to have. And I'll explain to you why. One of the great leaders of the previous generation was someone who ultimately lost his life in Treblinka. But he was the rabbi of the Warsaw Ghetto. And he gave many, many classes and many talks while they were there in the Warsaw Ghetto, trying to lift the spirits of the Jews who were there. And all their plight was obviously extremely negative, but he was a very positive person. And he was extremely expressive in the way that he wrote many of his different books. And in one letter that he writes, he really shares what's on his heart, and he says, almost a confession to God. And he says, God, if I had to come back to the world and do it all over again, I would actually do nothing differently than what I've done until this point. Because everything that I did with my whole heart and my whole soul. And I have no regrets. And I feel very confident with the way I've lived my life. But he says, if there was one thing I could do over, it would be this. Rotzeh ani lehit gayer. I wish I could come back into the world as a convert. How many people have been to an Orthodox Kabbalat Shabbat once in their lives? Never?
More than once.
You have been? Kabbalat Shabbat, Friday night service. Well, we look forward to joining together with you and having that opportunity. But the sense of appreciation and excitement and feeling and passion and connection that you feel when you do something for the first time, is something that we cannot share. It's something that we cannot replicate. It's just something we don't feel again. And he said, my only regret in the world is that I was born into a Jewish family and that I was just given this whole religion and I didn't come to it on my own and I didn't have the opportunity to really sense the appreciation and the excitement that somebody has from doing something for the very first time. That has been seared in my heart since the day I read it. Because so many of our experiences are such that we really don't have that sense of excitement and appreciation. And in some way, I am incredibly jealous of your opportunity and the gift that you are about to have and the blessing that's being brought into your life by being afforded this chance to go to Israel for the first time, to experience the beauty, to experience the sanctity, the holiness, to be uplifted by that experience is something that so many others do not have the gift of sharing, but you are all blessed to be a part of that. And I'm just excited for you. I'm excited with you. I wish I could come. And all I can say is this is just a very rare moment in your lives. Cherish it. Take full advantage of the experience. Take everything out of it that you can. And what I'd like to do this evening is, I don't love to speak. I love to learn together. So what I want to do tonight is really try to learn together a little bit. I've selected a number of themes. I don't know if many of you have heard of someone by the name of Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks. He was a towering personality who passed away about a year ago, a little over a year ago. He was the chief rabbi of England and the Commonwealth. He authored over 50 scholarly books in philosophy, in Jewish philosophy, and just his musings about many different happenings in the world. And I sifted through many of them today, many of his writings, to try to find different touch points, to try to frame what it means to have this experience to go to Israel. And the reason why I felt it was important to do that is because sometimes the feelings and the emotions that we have being in Israel are very hard to express and very hard to put on paper. It's something that I find quite often. And when I saw a lot of this, and I've collected it over the years and found different writings of his that really helped me frame what it is that I was feeling, I hope that in some way this will be helpful to you as well. So we're going to try to go through some of it. We don't have to go through all of it. Once again, this is just for your own enjoyment. I don't know how much time I have, but we'll see. When we get through some of it, we'll see where we're up to. So let us begin with the following. And again, I didn't write where each one of these is from. They're from many of his different books. He has 50 books altogether, or over 50. But these are not, I don't think any of them are from the same book. Many of them are collected from many different places. So let's go through. Number one. He writes, "The day will come when the story of Israel in modern times will speak not just to Jews, but to all who believe in the power of human spirit as it reaches out to God. As an everlasting symbol of the victory of life over death, of hope over despair. That is what Israel is all about. It's life over death. It's hope over despair. Israel has achieved great things. It has taken a barren land and made it bloom again." Do you know that that is why it's called the Green Line? Are you familiar? Everybody knows what the Green Line is? Really? Wow. You're in for a real experience. You've ever heard, potentially, that there's some controversy in Israel about where the borders are? So, there is something called the Green Line, which is the Jewish community, the Jewish settlements are on one side of the line. Many of the Arab communities are on the other side of the fence there. And it's strange why it's called the Green Line. And many suggest the reason why it's referred to as the Green Line is because the Jewish settlements somehow, miraculously, have the blessing of having green growing in their backyards and in their fields and in these barren lands that were barren for hundreds and hundreds of years. And you cross over that line into many other communities and you see that those fields are fallow, which is exactly what is forecast in the pages of the Bible itself. We are told that when the land is given over to other communities who are not under the Jewish sovereignty, they will not have the gift, they will not have the blessing. And you will see in Israel that this has come true. You will see that much of Israel is desert, is wasteland, there is nothing growing there. And you will see that in other parts of the country, other parts of the communities, it is flourishing, it is bustling. You'll see it. You'll see it. I don't have to tell you. But just keep that image in mind for when you go, you'll be able to experience that. It's taken an ancient language, the Hebrew of the Bible, and made it speak again. How amazing is it that so many thousands of years later, the language of choice in the land of Israel is the language of the Bible itself? How incredible is that? It's taken the West's old faith and made it young again. Israel has taken a tattered, shattered nation and made it live again. Israel is the country whose national anthem, Hatikva. What does Hatikva actually mean?
Hope.
Hope. Israel is the home of hope. So the first thing you should keep in mind when you go to Israel is, this is the land of hope. It's what the Jewish people have been hoping, yearning, praying, crying for so many millennia. And here it is. The hope of Jewish people for so many years has finally come true. It is the land of hope. And there are many things in our own lives that we hope for, that we look forward to, that we wish we could have. When we go to Israel, we remember that those are potentially a greater possibility than we may have otherwise thought, because the whole Israel is an impossibility. To believe in miracles is to believe in the story of the Jewish people. We are a miracle. We are all part of that miracle, and we are a people of hope. And just think about the people in Israel who dream big, the people in Israel, the advances in science and technology and in every field of emerging markets. And you will be amazed to see what kind of country this is. Aside from all the spirituality, I'm just saying, outside of all of that, you will see so much blessing and so much beauty and so much richness in that feeling of hope that has carried the Jewish people to where they are. Let's continue number two. What has kept us connected to Israel through thousands of years in exile? Ever thought about that? Is there a nation on this planet that has remained connected to any particular plot of land as we have? So let's read what he says. Jews never relinquished the dream of return. Wherever they are, they prayed about Israel and facing Israel. That is a fascinating phenomenon. Jews all over the world pray in the direction of Jerusalem. We all keep Jerusalem on our minds wherever we may be. Just about 3 weeks ago, I was in Australia. I was on a speaking tour in Australia in Melbourne and Sydney for 10 days. And while I was there, I was fascinated because here in the United States, when you pray, you're supposed to face east. And the reason for that is because that is the direction of Israel, of Jerusalem. And yet, when you're on the southern hemisphere, in Australia, you face a different direction. Naturally, because you also want to face Israel. I cried when I was there, only at one time. One evening, they had a get-together. How much time do I have? Because I've got nothing to do tonight. So, one evening, someone in the back will just go like this when it's time. You will, all right? So, one evening, they had a get-together celebrating Israel. It was Yom HaAtzmaut. And there we were, celebrating Israel independence, and 74 years later, celebrating this incredible miracle. And here we are, in the furthest place I can possibly be from Israel. And everyone joins together to sing about their hopes and their aspirations and their dreams to return back to Jerusalem. And I was so moved. Here I am in the most remote of locations. I couldn't be further away from Israel than I possibly am right now. And yet, every Jew in the room had one focus and one focus only. And that was, we all aspire and we yearn to the gift of returning to Israel. That is the blessing that all of you will have this summer when you join this trip. Second line, the Jewish people was the circumference of a circle, at whose center was the Holy Land and Jerusalem, the holy city. For centuries, they lived suspended between memory and hope, sustained by the promise that one day God would bring them back. And this is something that really has bound the Jewish people together and kept them connected to a land, because every time we pray, we ask for our return to Jerusalem. Every time we pray, we face Jerusalem, because we do this to remind ourselves that that is where we belong. That is our greatest point of connection. That is our touch point to spirituality. You ask yourself, how is it that the Jews living in Israel, with so much fear and terror from all the nations around them, millions of Arabs who many of them hate us more than they love their own children, are willing to give their own lives just to murder another Jew, you ask yourself, how does anyone actually live there? How can they survive? How can you live a life when you're living in fear? How many of you have young children and have been afraid to send your children to school because of what happened last week in Texas? We're all living in fear. Imagine if it was tenfold of that. How do people live? And yet, Jewish news has brought us, not Jewish news, international news has showed from international studies that Israel is now on the top 10 of happiest countries in the world. How fascinating is that? And you'll see it. You'll interact with the people in Israel and you will see how true it is. The people are just happy. They're living real lives. They're not stuck with some of the frivolous causes and pursuits that many in the diaspora are busy with. They're really living seriously happy lives. How can that be? So let's see. Number three. How do you live with the constant threat of violence and war? The answer is that takes faith. Israel is the people that has always been sustained by faith. Faith in God, faith in the future, and faith in life itself. And though Israel is a secular state, its very existence is a testimony to faith. The faith of hundreds of generations that Jews would return. How many of our ancestors have been faithful in their belief that someday God will come through on His promise and we as a nation will return? The faith that led the pioneers to rebuild the land against seemingly impossible odds. The faith that after the Holocaust, the Jewish people could live again. The faith that in the face of death continues to say, we will choose life. A number of years ago, there were three boys who were captured. They were coming home from school one evening. 16-year-old boys were waiting for a ride home. And you'll see, maybe it's a little dangerous, but all along the roads in Israel, you will see there are Israelis waiting on the side of the road. They have not learned their lesson. They're doing something pretty dangerous, but many of them do it. And they stand on the side of the road waiting for a hitchhike to go somewhere, to get to where they need to get to. Three 16-year-old boys were standing on the side of the road as they did every Thursday evening to get home for Shabbat. And they were picked up by an Arab who ultimately had captured them. And they went missing for 18 days. No coincidence. 18 is a very Jewish number. Chai. They were missing for 18 days. I don't know if you remember, but the Jewish world was gripped in fear. The Jewish world united all over in each continent to try to identify with the pain of those parents going through that challenge. And in the end, when the boys were found and ultimately buried, I had the great privilege of becoming close with one of those families. And we are very close friends to today, 8 years later. And one of those families had shared with me, I asked them, how do you continue to go on with life? How do you continue to be happy in life after going through the most unspeakable of horrors? And their answer was quite clear. We are built on faith and we choose to live. It's a choice that we make, that we choose to live. We will not allow death to destroy us. We choose to live. It's a choice that we make. And it's a choice that we're proud to make. I remember when I went for, how do you say yahrzeit in English, for the anniversary of their deaths. So I was invited to speak in the cemetery. They had hundreds of people who were gathered there to come commemorate the first anniversary of the deaths of these young men. And I came to Israel. I showed up in the cemetery, warmly embraced these parents. We were talking. We exchanged a few words. They gave me my seat. I was sitting there in the front, and they told me, you're the first speaker, but we're not going to start for another 15 minutes. And I was wondering, what's about to happen? 15 minutes, what's going to be happening in the next 15 minutes? Hundreds of people are already there. All the family members had already assembled. So what are we waiting for? And the next thing that I saw was so mind-blowing. It was something I'll never forget. You had three sets of parents standing by these symbolic graves. They actually form, the three graves of these three young men are together. They form a Star of David. It's amazing. If you have a chance to see it, it might be worth seeing, and it's just something very special. Three parents stood there and led hundreds of people in song, expressing their commitment, their faith, and their unwavering belief in God. And I just began to cry, and I said, where in the world would you ever see such a thing? Where do you find people like this? Salt of the earth, amazing people who just live life being happy after all they've been through and are totally unfazed by the challenges that came their way. And it's all because they're a faith-based community. They're a community that has hope because of the faith that they believe in. So let us continue. I see I don't have so much time. Let us skip to number 5. In Israel, Jewish life is a community of fate. There, Jews from the most secular to the most pious suffer equally from war and terror and benefit equally from prosperity and peace. Judaism in Israel is a presence you breathe, not just a religion you practice. You'll see that. You know, here in the United States, we go to temple, maybe we light a menorah, we keep Shabbat, we bake challah, maybe something along the way, we check in with religion here and there. It's not our life. You go to Israel, he's so right. It's the presence that you breathe. It's the air that you feel. It's the ambiance of everything around you. You'll see it. You'll understand it. In Israel, as nowhere else, Jewishness is part of the public domain in the language, the landscape, the calendar. There you can stand amid the ruins and relics of towns that were living communities in the time of the Bible and feel the full, astonishing sweep of time across which the Jewish people wrestled with its fate as Jacob once wrestled with the angel. And there you will become conscious in the faces you see and the accents you will hear. You'll meet people from, as we say in Hebrew, Me'arba Kanfot Haaretz, from the four corners of the globe. They all come together in Israel. Of the astonishing diversity of Jews from every country and every culture, brought together in the great ingathering as once. In Ezekiel's vision, the dismembered fragments of a broken people joined together and came to life again. And that is why for diaspora Jews, spending time in Israel is an essential and transformative experience of Jewish peoplehood, and why Birthright, the American program aimed at sending all young Jews to Israel, is so successful. Because we have the opportunity to realize that we're part of something so much larger. It's not just our community here. It's not just the community in New York. It's not just our community in the United States. It's Jews from all over the world that feel connected to one another. As we say in Hebrew, Kol Yisrael Arivim Zeh LaZeh. We all feel that deep sense of connection to one another. And I urge you to just pay attention. Listen, as you'll hear Jews from all over the world speaking in different languages and different dialects, looking perhaps differently than we look, customs that are different than the customs that we may have, celebrations that may look different than any bar or bat mitzvah that you've ever participated in. You'll see. But that's the beauty of Israel. That's what it is. It's the ingathering of all exiles. It's what brings the Jewish people together. We're going to skip number 6. I just feel when I walk the streets of Israel, there's a sense of godliness in everything that happens there. It's just something you can't describe. It is difficult to reflect deeply on the rebirth of Israel without sensing a touch of heaven in the minds of men and women. While it's true that, yes, Ben-Gurion was the first prime minister and established the state of Israel. And it's true that many politicians and many great philanthropists and many great people along the way have brought us to where we are. But what he's saying is so true. You cannot ignore the sense of the touch of God that is beneath the surface of everything that happens in Israel. It is so clear. It is so obvious. It is so apparent. And once again, I hope you'll be blessed with that feeling and with that appreciation and understanding. Let us go to number 8. At the heart of Jewish faith is Jerusalem, the holy city whose name is peace. Has a people ever loved a city so deeply for so long? Almost every prayer in the Jewish prayer book includes a prayer for Jerusalem. The word itself figures more than 900 times in the Bible. Jerusalem, David's city, the place where the temple stood, home of the divine presence, the place where, still today, you can feel God's closeness as nowhere else. When you go to the Kotel for the first time and you experience that awesome nature of what it is to be in the presence of God in a way you have never felt it in your lives, when you feel that God is enveloping you, when you feel His embrace, you'll understand exactly what this means. And though all the remains of the temple is one wall, still to stand and pray in that spot is to feel the presence of 3,000 years of Jewish prayers, tears, and hopes. How blessed we are. That which our parents, our grandparents, our ancestors cried for, would have given anything in the world to experience. We are blessed in our generation to reap the benefits of and to relish in the great gift of what this is all about. I'd like to close with one final comment, and that is, we're coming up to a day of celebration just at the end of this week, which is referred to as Zman Matan Torateinu. It's the time that we celebrate that God gave us His eternal Torah, His laws. And perhaps it's hard for us to connect to that day. Everyone connects in their own way. But what I find fascinating is the following. What are the two most significant mountains in all of Jewish history? Anybody know? Sinai is obviously one of them. And what is the second? Masada is very significant, but that's in modern Jewish history. If you take ancient Jewish history from all the centuries and all the millennia, Sinai is obviously one. And the second is Temple Mount, where you'll all be able to see one remnant of the temple, which is the Kotel. One remnant of that old structure where you'll be able to feel God's presence in the most powerful sense that you've ever felt it. These are the two most significant mountains in Jewish history. And yet there's one marked distinction. You look through the pages of the Bible and you find that when it came to that experience on Mount Sinai, when God communicated with us as a nation, when God Himself came down onto the mountain. So we know that as that experience was getting underway, we were warned, nobody's allowed to go on the mountain. Everyone has to stay far back because God is on the mountain. We cannot come too close. But the moment that experience was over, there was no longer a prohibition. The Bible itself instructs us, now there is no significance to Mount Sinai at all. That is a very good question. Where is Mount Sinai? We don't exactly know, but were we to locate it, were we to know exactly where it was, we would have no problem at all ascending the mountain. There would be nothing wrong with that at all. Comes to the Temple Mount, and the rule is very different. We don't have a temple any longer, and yet there are still restrictions of where one is allowed to go on the Temple Mount. And why is that? How strange. These two very significant mountains that represent two major experiences in Jewish history. And yet the rules that govern them are very different. When it comes to Sinai, there is no longer sanctity to the Mount Sinai, and we can treat it as we please. We can go there as we wish. When it comes to the Temple Mount, we have to be careful. Why is that? And the answer is as follows. When it came to Mount Sinai, that was an experience that we did nothing to invest in its sanctity. God descended onto that mountain, revealed Himself to His people, and the moment that experience was over, He left. There was nothing left on the mountain that was sanctified. But what endowed the Temple Mount with sanctity? What was it that makes that a very significant place in Jewish history? It is the thousands of years of Jewish sacrifice that made that a special place in our hearts and our minds. It is not God who made it sanctified. It is us, our investment. That's where Abraham went and was willing to sacrifice his own son. That is where the beginning of that consecration began. With that selfless act of love for God. And from his time and on, that is what Jews have forever been doing on Mount Moriah, on the Temple Mount. They have shown God how much they're willing to invest in their relationship with Him. Something that is created from our investment is a sanctity that will never be lost. That is something that will be there for all eternity. that we will never lose. And that is why that mountain continues to be relevant and significant for all future generations of Jews. That is what you're about to experience. While it's beautiful that we're going to be in Israel, while we understand that this is a blessing of a lifetime to have this opportunity, we ask ourselves, does that mean that for those of us who live in the diaspora, like all of us, who live in exile, does that mean we are not significant players in Jewish history? Does that mean we don't have a role to play? Does that mean that if we're not in the promised homeland of the Jewish people, we are insignificant? The answer to that is absolutely not. Let's look at number 9. Israel does not negate the diaspora, because Judaism is a matter of holy lives as well as holy places. Being a Jew does not only mean that you are familiar with holy places on the map or historical figures that once lived. It's about holy people. And wherever we are in the world, we have the opportunity to invest in ourselves. The same way so many generations of Jews invested in the sanctity of Mount Moriah, of the Temple Mount, and brought it its level of sanctity, we have the ability and we have the opportunity to invest in ourselves, to live holy lives, to live exalted lives, to live spiritual lives, to live connected lives. That's the gift that this trip to Israel is meant to inspire all of us to do. Whether we stay there in the end, I venture to say most of you are going to probably come back. Probably. I'm sure your families would appreciate that. But what we take back from that experience is it's not only about holy places, it's about holy people. And we, through our own investment, through our own encouragement, through being together with each other, from a mindset of growth, from trying to be ones where we are aspiring to do more in our lives, to be more spiritually connected, we are given that opportunity to be not just in holy places, but to be those holy people. So I wish you all an amazing trip. It was a pleasure to meet all of you. And thank you for having me here.
The words that you said were very, very powerful for the people that have been there before. The fact that Har HaMoriah, that it has so much holiness in it because of our years and years, thousands of years of investment, has to make you think about your investments. And that's exactly what Rav Shai was saying. I look forward to seeing everyone's investments into their Judaism, into their families. It's not only about us and ourselves. It starts with us. And from there, we bring it to our families. We bring it to our communities. We bring it to our friends. Thank you so, so much. We're certainly more ready to receive the Torah this week than we were on the drive here. So thank you very much, Rav Shai. We are actually going to play a speed dating game.